Namaho Vishnu Padaya Shapastaya Bhutalai Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Samedniti Namine. You can chant. Saraswati Deve Gauravane Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavane Rasyacharine Sitarine Deve Gauravane Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavane Shachane Shachane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhara Shiva Sare Gauravakta Vrindana Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasare Gaurata Vrinda Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahansa, Paravritakacharya, Othitera, Sitrishi, Srimad, His Divine Grace Sabaya, Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami, Maharishila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nandakoti Vaishnava Vrindi Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Brahm Sekho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopagopinath Swayam Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Maturadam ki jai, Jagannatha Swami ki jai, Yamunamaya ki jai, Srimati Lalasa Devi ki jai, Samaveda Vakta Vrindi ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to His Divine Grace, the Prabhupada ki jai, Nama Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pachari Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. I'm just going to check. Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani. Okay, good. Everything's going well. So, this is a session on empathic, okay? Empathic flowers. And they smell really bad. Good. So this is a session on empathic communication. Some of you have attended some of my courses before. A lot of you have attended some of my courses before. So we're going to start from a little bit different angle of vision because, as I mentioned before, I do like to do things differently each time I give this course because I get bored. I have a need for variety, like Prabhupada said. Variety is the mother of enjoyment, so if I do the same thing over and over again, I just go to sleep. You don't want me to go to sleep in the middle of the course, so that would be very bad. So I'm using a wireless mic so everybody can hear me, and I think I'm loud enough in person, so I don't need a microphone in person. So what I wanted to start talking about today was the vaccine. And I'm going to connect it. I'm going to actually connect it to empathic communication, just a different angle to approach it. But recently, I posted a video in which I interviewed a doctor and another healthcare worker on Facebook about why people should get the vaccine and then Delta variant and all that other nice stuff. And I got so much beautiful feedback. I don't know if anyone's seen the feedback I got, but anyway, I got so many wonderful, loving feedback from the video where I was called everything from a monster to a bogus guru, and my disciples were advised to take my picture off the altar. I mean, really interesting. And let me explain how I deal with it. Well, yeah, first I'll explain how I deal with it, because that's empathic communication. I deal with it, and then I'll explain why they're reacting the way they are after that. So the way I deal with it is I see everybody is acting according to needs that are not being met, which is really interesting, because one of the principles of empathic communication is that everybody acts and talks and thinks, and does whatever else they do as living entities, based on needs that are met or unmet, or what feels too, you know, because we feel happy, it's a need that's met. If we feel sad, it's a need that's not met. If we feel angry, usually it's a need that's not met, unless we like to be angry, and that's a need that we have. And that's not wrong, actually. Krishna has a need to be angry too. That's one of the indirect rasas. Did you know that? You have 7 indirect rasas and 5 direct rasas, and anger is one of the indirect ones. So sometimes it's fun to be angry. So anger doesn't mean that there's a need not being met. It may mean that you're meeting a need by being angry. So it's not that we have anything against anger. So I just see that basically from an empathic communication standpoint, that people are struggling with unmet needs. And even worse, they've joined a religious society. Now, let me unpack that for you. Lest you think that I'm not advocating religion. I'll sit down sometimes, and other times I'll stand up because I like being active. So it's been shown through many studies that people in religious societies, 85 to 90% of the people in religious societies, are less empathic than people in general. Wow. And you'll actually see that not only in ISKCON, and also you'll see that with the, I guess the born-again Christian followers of Donald Trump. Right? I mean, you'll find the same, it's exactly the same dynamic you'll see that people who went or said nice things about me, I'm not saying they're attacking me, because that wouldn't be empathic, but that people who were followers of Donald Trump say about, you know, the Democratic Party or about the election or anything like that. It's the same mood. It's exactly the same mood. Why is that? Well, the needs are unmet, yes. But I would think, I would say even more so, dealing with one of the blocks of communication, which we call the blocks or the miscommunication, which is called diagnosis. Because people in religious societies, and in ISKCON, any religious society, it's not a fault of ISKCON per se or a fault of the Hare Krishna movement per se, but people who tend to join religious societies gravitate towards putting labels on others. It's a very common phenomenon. And whether you're a born-again Christian, you know, a fanatic, you know, whatever, or born-again Hare Krishna, hoping not to be born again, you know, whatever. So you still have the same dynamic because it's groupism. It's like, or what Marshall Rosenberg called gangs. You know, we're all like, want to be part of a gang or a group. I mean, for example, I'll give you an example of my own life, which is kind of funny. Recently, some of my disciples bought a Tesla car. You know what a Tesla car is. And they let me drive it whenever I want. And I just, every time I see another Tesla, you know, I wave and I feel like... I feel like, you know, one of my friends, even though that, even if some big meat-eating Rakshasa demon driving the other... I know I'm not supposed to think like that. But it's just like, and then I look at the people, the other people with the other cars, I think, these poor conditioned souls. You know, just stuck in the last century, you know. So as soon as you have the gangs, you know, the ins and the outs, and then you also... So then you tend to look down upon people, and then you also have names for the outs. And of course, we have so many names, which I talk about in my seminar, like demon, rakshasa. Oh, let's share some names.
If Karmi.
Karmi, yeah. Who else has a name?
Non-devotee.
Non-devotee.
Materialistic.
Materialistic. Meat-eater. Meathead. Anyway, we have all sorts of extremely interesting names for people not in our movement. And so we tend to see things through names. And also another problem, which you may or may not agree with, is that we get into rituals to such an extent that we actually forget the purpose of Krishna consciousness, which Rupa Goswami mentions as Niyam Agraha in his Upadeshamrita. In other words, doing the following the rules and regulations, just as rules and regulations. And we get in, I mean, one of my favorite examples is that you get into doing arti and doing circles when you're offering your arti articles, and you're counting circles instead of thinking, Krishna, please accept this. How many people have had that experience? Just about everybody who does arti has had that experience. And Krishna says, Bhakti Mama Bhijanati Yavinyas Chasmi Tatvata, only by devotion could be I be known. And that's not devotion. That's not devotion. But, you know, obviously, we're not saying do away with the circles. Just, you know, squares. Like that. Or you could be like Sanatana Goswami telling Madan Mohan, you know, just find your own salt, Krishna. You know, I'm not saying that. But it's a question of really being in touch with what we're doing while we're doing, rather than being absorbed in just like the external motions and the words and the designations. So I see that these devotees who are, first of all, they're identifying with the anti-vaxxer gang. And I don't. I'm not a vaxxer or anti-vaxxer. You know, I just like do what I want, and I'm not finding fault in them. You know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But should we be demonizing people because they have a different opinion? You know, someone might be scared of taking the vaccine because they've heard it causes blood clot, you know, the AstraZeneca or whatever vaccine causes blood. That's all right. But, you know, have some trust in my judgment, or at least don't call me names. So they're very much into, the point I'm making is they're very much into labeling people like that, which is called a diagnosis. There's 4 D's of discommunication, all of which religious people are really prone to. There's diagnosis and there's demand. You should behave yourself and do as I do. Then there's deserve. You deserve to be kicked out of the Hare Krishna. So you want to write down the 4 D's of discommunication for everybody so we can understand what they do. These are discommunication. So anyway, and then there's the last one is called denial of responsibility. The devil made me do it. Maya made me do it. So we in religious societies demand, diagnose, and denial. Okay. So people in religious societies are really into that. I mean, just like you see right now in, I like to bring in the news. Like in Afghanistan, the Taliban have just taken over. So, like, God forbid a lady should walk around without a burqa. She deserves to be stoned and demand that she walks around like that. And they diagnose someone as an infidel, which we do too. You know, we're no better than them if we're actually thinking in the same way. And as far as denial of responsibility, yeah, you made me angry or whatever. So these are the 4 things that actually keep us from connecting with our real self and connecting with our real needs. So let me go over them a little bit more. Maybe not in a religious context, but just even in a family context. For those, I guess the children aren't here, so they won't get affected by this discussion right now. So, like, parents bring up children generally in what we call an authoritarian culture with these 4 different dynamics. One is the children deserve to be punished because they did this or didn't do that, or they deserve to be rewarded. So when you use this word or use this particular concept of deserve, you're disconnecting someone from the activity that they either deserved, that they actually did wrong or did right in your estimation. For example, let's say a child takes some crayons and he marks up the wall and everything like that. So we will say, you know, parent is non-empathic, will say, you deserve to be punished. You deserve to, how would you punish your children?
Don't give them food.
You deserve not to eat. You deserve to go to bed without prasadam tonight. And so what that does, it doesn't make or train them not to do the activity that they did. It just makes them, first of all, either more rebellious, which is usually the case, or it just makes them more submissive, in which case they actually lose touch with their own feelings and needs. You know, there's two ways we can actually deal with demands and deserve, or children can deal with demands and deserves. One is by becoming more submissive, and the other one, which is actually really bad. You don't want submissive children. That maybe comes as a shock to you. Because submissive children mean they don't have their own moral compass, they don't have their own ability to discriminate, and they're not expressing their own autonomy or need to be a person, individual person. So anyway, so that's the problem with the deserve and demand. And, you know, and then the parents also, of course, demand means you're demanding to do things. And so even if you say you deserve to be rewarded because you got all A's in school, what it does is also disconnects them from the particular activity itself and makes them like the reward rather than the activity that they perform to get rewarded. And the example I usually give at my seminar is myself. When I was young, I would get $5, I think it was, $5 for each A I got in school. And each B, I think, was like, I forget, $2 or $3. Each C, zero. Each D, it was a negative number. So what it did is made me like to make money. It did. Because when the rewards are extrinsic, have nothing to do with the activity itself, then it makes you like the rewards rather than the activity itself. And the same thing with punishment. It makes you avoid punishment rather than change the mentality that caused the activity that you didn't want to have. Does everybody understand that point? And so, and then, you know, diagnose, you know, my child is a rascal, or, you know, like my mother would say to me, which has haunted me my whole life, that if your head wasn't attached to your shoulders, you would lose it. You know, in other words, you lose things. That's a diagnosis. And to this day, I do lose things because my head is attached to my shoulder. Fortunately, I haven't lost that yet. And then, then denial of responsibility. That's a big one that the child uses sometimes. That, you know, I did this because I was tired. I did this because I was angry. And actually, adults use that. I yelled at you because I was hungry. I yelled at you because I've been working all day long. You know, giving excuses for their behavior. So these four D's of discommunication actually keep us from connecting with our real feelings and our real needs and make us unhappy. Because if we want to be happy, both materially and spiritually, we need to have our needs fulfilled. And now I'm making a distinction between needs and desires. It's not that we have to have our desires fulfilled. Desires are simply things that pop into the mind, you know, as Bhagavad Gita tells us, when we contemplate sense objects, we become attached to something. That means we desire it. We become lusty or enthusiastic after it. And then we become angry. Jayato vishyat pumsam sangostesha pajayate sangat sanjayate kama kama grota pajayate. That's a desire. But we have needs. Now in the Krishna conscious movement, and in which we stress so much on renunciation, we're taught, not that everyone was taught, but many people are taught to deny their basic needs. And when we're talking about basic needs, we're talking about things like food. Well, of course, food you're never taught to deny in Krishna conscious movement. But basic needs are things like shelter and, yes, and also food and air and friendship and autonomy and play and freedom and, God forbid I should use this word, love. even though in the Upadeshamrita you do have that word being used, you know, pratilakshana, the symptoms of love. Adadati pratigrinati guyam akyati prichati bhogte bhojyate chaiva, you know, the six loving exchanges. And Prabhupada does say in the purport that these six loving exchanges are the methodology, and I'm just paraphrasing him, by which the Krishna conscious movement expands. You know, because people join the Krishna conscious movement for a variety of reasons. I guess some people join because they want something to eat, but most of us joined, I think most people join because of the association. You know, because you need a society. Like Prabhupada said, quoting some Englishman, society, friendship, and love divinely bestowed upon man by God. So we all have this need for a society or a group, not necessarily a gang, but a group that we can associate with. And so when we find these loving relationships between devotees, then we want to stay in the movement. And then when we find these other relationships, like we sometimes get when we post something to Facebook, like I mentioned about the vaccine, then what am I doing here in the Krishna consciousness movement? You know, when I'm just trying to help the devotees, my whole motivation is to help the devotees and understand and protect the devotees from some disease. And then, wow. So, anyway, so the way, getting back to the vaccine thing, so the way I would see those people is they're just trying to fulfill the needs. And the way I deal with that internally is that I understand all my needs are being met by myself, and I'm not depending on someone else to meet my needs. As long as we depend on other people to meet our needs, then we fall under this demand number two over there. Looks like a three, but it's a number two. But anyway, two threes and a four. So when we actually consider other people to be agents to fulfill my needs, then it destroys a loving relationship. Because loving relationship is based upon voluntarily giving something, accepting something, giving prasadam and accepting prasadam, like that, giving gifts and accepting gifts, you know, revealing the mind in confidence, not forcefully. So I look at these people, I said, these people are not meant to fulfill my needs. I have strategies to fulfill my needs, and therefore they're not interfering with my needs, and therefore I can actually love them, even though they're saying all these things about me. Not because normally people will say, look at all those people that are attacking you, Maharaj. They're not attacking me. They're actually expressing their unmet needs. And so based on that, I can be empathic with them. And I just feel, wow, they have so many unmet needs. And they're diagnosing, they're disconnected from their self. These poor souls, and I'm so great. Now, anyway, you have to be careful about that, too, because you can get into that consciousness. You know, I'm really empathic. That's also a diagnosis. I'm really empathic. I'm loving like that. And they, you know, they're so disconnected. I feel sorry for them. Feeling sorry for someone is not empathy, actually. What is empathy? I mean, that's an interesting question, because we call this course empathic communication. Empathy basically means to try to understand someone else's feelings and needs and to understand them, basically. Not to feel sorry for them. Because feeling sorry for someone is not empathy. It puts yourself on a higher position. Like if I feel sorry, oh, these people who are who are saying nice things about me. As Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, he who criticizes me is my friend, actually. But these people are saying whatever they're saying about me or about my philosophy. Then I am actually not being empathic with them. I am just judging them. I'm diagnosing them. I am establishing myself as being superior to them. It's just another division of false ego. Empathy means just to resonate, not only to understand, but to resonate with their own feelings and needs. And think of a way also that you can help them understand their own feelings and needs. So that's really what empathic communication is all about. Okay, so let's talk about, what should we talk about? Let's talk about needs right now. Can we do a need chart? I think everyone can hear us nicely online. Yeah. Okay. So these are the four D's of discommunication. Deserve. You deserve to be punished. You deserve to be rewarded. You demand something from someone, or they demand something from you. You put a static label. That's diagnosing someone. Static label means you call them some name. And actually, naturally, we do that with people when we first meet people. We come to a conclusion about who they are and what they are, and we give them a name immediately. That's it's standard behavior, which is not actually empathic. Like, he is kind, she is intelligent. You know, you think about it. Actually, maybe we should do an exercise about this. Okay. So why don't you turn to the person next to you? Not me. And call them what? Just give a one name designation or one word designation for what you think they are. And then we're going to do something else after that. Just one word. You know, first impressions or lasting impressions. Yeah. All right, you did that already?
Yes.
Okay.
Maharaj, if you don't know each other.
That's even better. No, but that's all right. That's even better, you know.
Okay.
You are blah. First thing that comes to your mind. Okay, you don't have to. Okay. That's funny. So now we're going to. Okay, everybody did it? So let's hear some of the designations, diagnoses.
Gentle.
I told him you are strange.
All right. How did you respond? You're a joker. Okay. So So let's say you're strange. How do you feel about that if someone just looks at you as strange? Okay. Let's say, let's take this a little further. Okay. You're very strange. I mean, just the way you wear your hair, your mustache, your shirt with this funny symbol on it, and that's the whatever thing you're wearing down there, that white thing, you know. This is weird. You're very weird and strange. How do you feel? It bothers you, doesn't it? Yeah, because you... Aren't you thinking, you know, I want someone to try to understand me more, you know, as a person? Because that's... But generally, we deal with people like that. All right, let's pick another couple here. Who else has an interesting one? Come on, someone share.
I feel that she's sincere. She's very sincere.
Okay, you're very sincere because you're very dedicated and sincere. Such a wonderful, sincere devotee you are. Everything you do is very sincere. It's not you, you know, right? It's just like, you know, you're dynamic, you're not static. What I'm talking about here, what I'm pointing out here is these labels are static labels. Sometimes we may act a little weird. That's true. Everybody acts weird from time to time. But nobody is weird. Nobody is stupid. Nobody is intelligent. Nobody is sincere. It's that we're all acting, we're dynamic living entities. And the interesting thing is, when we have these there's a study or some studies that have been done with cultures that don't have the word or the verb to be in their language. In other words, they don't have a way of saying you are this or you are that. Their language is more dynamic or flowing. And in those cultures, there's less violence. Because you don't have a way to see someone as an enemy or enemy image. But in English, and of course in Hindi and all the languages that I know, you have ways of diagnosing people. Someone, like Prabhupada said, give the dog a bad name and hang him. So it's pretty much the same thing. So you see, it really disconnects you when you actually just give someone a label and you think of them as that label and you address them as that label. You're not seeing them as a person anymore. Okay? That's an interesting exercise. So, so diagnosis, that's diagnosis, and denial of responsibility. I want to dwell a little bit more on that one. For example, someone will say that I have, let's say you have dealing with an alcoholic. An alcoholic will say, I drink because I'm an alcoholic, without taking responsibility. The opposite of denial of responsibility is taking responsibility for your actions. And we're all responsible for whatever actions that we have. But in modern culture, so much of our responsibility has been taken away from us by, I guess, modern psychological diagnoses. You know, that I have this problem, this is my PTSD, Prabhu. When I was young, I was spanked by my mother. And, you know, like Krishna, here's an example I give sometimes. Krishna could say, you know, I have this trauma about sticks. Because when I was young, my mother used to chase me and tie me up to a grinding mortar. So that's, anyway, so, all right, so these are the four D's of discommunication. We can go over them further. So let's talk about needs right now. Because the very basis of empathic communication is the understanding of needs. because, as I mentioned before, everyone acts, thinks, feels, because of needs met or unmet. So, I think I have a need chart here. So I just want to refer to that. I had a need chart. So let's talk about, give me 1 second. Find my need chart. Anyway, even if I can't find it, let me look in the book. I don't have a chart in the book. That's rascaldom. I'm a rascal. So, that's a diagnosis. 70. Yeah, page 70. Yeah. Needs. Here we go. It's not a chart, but there's actually a list. So you got your basic bodily needs. Air, water, food, etc. And then we have our shelter needs, like physical, which are actually bodily needs too. Physical, shelter. I'm not going to include mental or spiritual because that's something different. We have a need for interconnectedness, which is reciprocation, giving and receiving, a need for self-acceptance, which is called self-satisfaction, self-acceptance, autonomy, authenticity. Actually, we left a lot out here. Well, I really have to edit this book. And we have a need for, ultimately at the peak of the triangle, we have a need for what Maslow calls self-actualization, which I call Krishna consciousness, connection to Krishna. And there's a few other needs in there too that are not mentioned in the book, like the need for play, recreation, need for humor. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and as Chaitanya Shikshamrita, just in case you're wondering if I'm just really getting too much touchy-feely here, talks about basic needs and how the needs need to be fulfilled for someone to be steady and stable in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam talks about, in the context of the Gajendra Mokshana story, which I think most of you know, Gajendra is an elephant. He's fighting a crocodile on the water, and the crocodile is winning. And Prabhupada, because the crocodile is an animal of the water, and Gajendra is an animal of the land. So Prabhupada said that this indicates, using this as a metaphorical example, this indicates that one should be able to fight Maya, or be aloof from Maya, in a situation that's in accordance with one's psychophysical nature. I'm paraphrasing Prabhupada. This is not exactly what Prabhupada said. And then Prabhupada was talking about the different ashrams. You know, the brahmachari, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa. So one should fight, or I'm not even going to use the word fight, but should be able to continue executing Krishna consciousness in a steady way when one is situated properly according to one's needs. So I'm generalizing it right now, not just ashrams. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes that point. So we should be aware of what needs we have, and we connect our feelings with the needs. And this is the first step in the process of empathic communication. That when we have some feelings, which we all have, hopefully, we understand that is coming from a need, met or unmet. Very easy. And you don't blame what stimulates it. For example, if you, let's say if one of you were to say to me, you're just a boring old man. Actually, we can try that. Can some of you say that? Some of you bold enough to say that, commit a mad elephant offense? Anyway, so I had people do that in one seminar. I'll say it to myself. Let's say Someone says to you, says to me, you are a boring old man. And I get depressed. Not really. I probably just punch the guy, you know. And probably say back to them, you know, you're a jackass yourself, you know, or something. But anyway, so someone, and empathically, I would go through this whole process, which we're going to elaborate on in a second. I would think, he said, I'm a boring old man, and instead of getting angry with him, I would give myself some self-empathy. I would say, he said, I'm a boring old man, and I'm feeling angry, depressed, whatever feelings come into my mind, because I have a need for appreciation. I have a need for love, or I have a need for reciprocation, or something like that. And then I'm taking responsibility, so I'm connecting with these right now. I'm taking responsibility rather than denying or blaming. You know, denial is also blaming. Same thing. But the natives are getting restless.
It's okay with you?
Yeah, it's all right. They're children. Just let them destroy the house. So, anyways. They have a need for play. I'm used to it. As long as they don't do that at 11 o'clock at night when I'm trying to go to sleep. So sometimes I go to these programs in people's houses, and you know, I'm finished by 8 o'clock at night, but the children get so wired up eating sweets that they're bouncing off the walls to 1 o'clock in the morning. So I gave up staying at people's houses after that. I just sleep in my car. Anyway, so... It's a lot easier.
It's a Tesla.
Yeah, because the back seat folds down and makes a bed in the back. So anyway, so no, the car drives me back. I can just sleep as it's driving. It's true. I don't do that though. So anyway, so getting back to the point, I understand that I have these needs, so I'm not blaming anymore. I'm not blaming the person. You made me angry. You made me sad. You made me depressed. I'm thinking that I have this need for appreciation. And obviously, the person who said, you're a boring old man, is not giving me that appreciation. So, what do I do? I fulfill that need through some other strategy. I take responsibility. That's also part of denial there. Taking responsibility for fulfilling my own need. And you will find, forget about this example I just gave, you know, someone says something to me, but you will find in relationships, the main thing that destroys relationships in marriage or other situations, friendship, is that people see the other as agents of need fulfillment. That you are supposed to, you know, these all the things are connected. You are supposed to, there's demand again. You are supposed to do this. Your business is my husband or is my wife. And the wife is the cook. I'm joining the Taliban, you know. Women are not supposed to be educated. We have some Taliban advocates in our... It's gone too, don't we? There was actually this one book put forth by one of my godbrothers, you know, women masters or whatever, mothers or whatever. So, no one's heard of that book?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mothers or masters or whatever. So anyway, you know, you're supposed to do this. This is your role. And, That destroys the relationship. Yes, you may have a robot, but you won't have a wife or a husband. And then what's satisfying about that? Isn't it? Just like if someone cooks for you and they don't want to do it and they don't have devotion, who wants to eat? I was just listening to one class Prabhupada was giving, and he was talking about his voyage to America on the Jaladuta. And he said, for the first few days, the captain was providing vegetarian food for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada lost his desire to eat. And Prabhupada said, I was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And then the captain, Captain Punja was his name, he gave Prabhupada a little cooking, a stove, electric stove. And Prabhupada started cooking khichdi, butter khichdi for himself. And Prabhupada really liked it and was eating more and more and more and got healthier. So the point is that someone who was cooking, the person who was cooking, obviously didn't want to cook. He was cooking it like they do in restaurants, just for money or just because he was forced to do it or something like that. And the mood went into the food, and Prabhupada wasn't able to eat it because Prabhupada was very sensitive to who was cooking for him. It's a very interesting point. So in other words, there's no relationship where someone has to do something for someone else. It's your duty. And there's no gratefulness either, because part of a relationship is being very grateful, thankful. Isn't it? I mean, one of the first things I experienced when I was in India is that when I said thank you to someone, they couldn't relate to it. Did you ever have that? It's just like, thank you? Did you ever have that experience? You know, in America, I was trained up when I was young. My mother said there's two magic words, please and thank you. I just remember that from my childhood. But in India, it was just like, because, no, I'm supposed to do it. This is my duty. In other words, the only reason I did anything for you is because it's my duty. I couldn't care a damn about you, but... You know, you talk about, and then you talk about close relationships like husband and wife. You know, the only reason I cook for you is because you're my husband. It's the same thing, isn't it? And so we don't really say thank you to each other very much. And we don't even know how to say thank you. That's another subject matter, empathic communication. We don't say thank you to each other very much. Because we think the other person has to do it, right? You have to cook for me, you have to clean for me, you have to iron my clothes. And the point is, the proof of that is if they don't do it, what do? You get angry. You know, one day you get up and your dhoti is all wrinkled or whatever, or your pants or whatever, it's all wrinkled and there's no breakfast. Isn't it? I mean, people are not taught to be self-reliant. You know, I had one disciple, his wife left him when he was 55 years old or something like that. And his parents called him up and said, you have to get remarried. And I said, you're 55. Because his parents thought, you know, you're going to starve to death. I said, that's really not a good reason to get married. I mean, I think it's easier and cheaper to learn how to cook yourself. Because his parents are thinking like that. Because they're from India, of course. So they're so used to a situation where the husband doesn't know how to do anything, you know, doesn't go in the kitchen, doesn't do anything. He just makes the money, but the wife does her thing, so if something happens to the wife, he'll starve to death. Isn't it? And Sounds familiar? Sorry if I offended anybody. There's nothing.
Some of the ladies are laughing.
Because they're used to it. So to actually have good relationships, the conclusion I came to is one should be ready to do things for themselves. If one's ready to do things for themselves, one can be truly grateful because you're not dependent on someone else. Prabhupada actually said overdependence on someone else weakens one. It actually does. You know, if someone can't cook, I'll cook. And if someone does cook, then you feel so grateful because they didn't have to do it. You know, the demand there. They didn't have to cook. And it really is a really sweet relationship. You know, when I came here and I ate kasha, have to do it, and I was thankful. You know, she watched my video. Learned how to make kasha. So that's really the point. I mean, we have these needs for loving relationships, and loving relationships are voluntary relationships, not involuntary relationships, not based upon diagnoses. You know, see how I'm keep referring back to that. Not based on diagnosis. You are the wife. You are the husband. You are the friend. You are the cook. You are the child. Imagine poor Lakshman. You are the younger brother. You got to listen to me. Fortunately, I didn't give Lakshman this course, or else the Ramayana would have never worked out. Imagine Lakshman says it doesn't fulfill my need to send Sita Devi into the forest. Krishna is more like dynamic like that, because even though Krishna was the younger brother of Balaram, he just didn't listen to him when he disagreed with him. Right? He arranged Subhadra's marriage with Arjuna, even though Balaram was really upset. He arranged for Bhimsain to hit a Duryodhana below the belt. You know, so many things. Krishna was not following Vedic etiquette. Now, I'm not talking... we should definitely follow Vaishnava etiquette. That's actually very important. Especially if you're a sannyasi like me, it's important because you get all the respect. Anyway, so... you know, if I was just an ordinary Prabhu, I wouldn't be in favor of it. But... So a very important point, and I think it's perhaps the most important point, is to have good relationships with others, loving, voluntary relationships. And that, to me, that's, if one has that sort of relationship, then the other needs are not as significant, except for air, food, water, light, and things like that. And that's why you see these Vaishnavas. You read about these Vaishnavas like Narottama Das Thakur, Shyamananda, Srinivas Acharya, how they related to each other in such loving ways. How they couldn't bear to be separated from each other. I mean, such love between the Vaishnavas. So, anyway, so let's get back to the point about the process of empathic communication. So, when someone says something, or something stimulates your feeling, whether it's a pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling, then you immediately connect it to a need. And when you immediately connect it to a need, you can take responsibility for fulfilling that need. And then you immediately come up with some strategy to fulfill that particular need. That's one way of dealing with it. And once you've done that, and you've centered yourself on your own needs and your own strategies and your own feelings, then you can actually empathically deal with others. Because as long as you're struggling with your own feelings that are overwhelming you and your own needs are overwhelming you, you can't really be empathic with others. So empathy begins with oneself. Be self-empathic. And empathy means understanding feelings and needs. Basically, that's it. How do you feel, or how do I feel, and what need is behind it? And then, when you're centered like that, when you're peaceful like that, then you can actually go out to other people and say to other people, and of course you don't want to use the same language, but in essence, say to other people, are you feeling sad because you have a need for food or something like that? And that's it. I mean, that's the whole process in a nutshell, isn't it? Can you think of anything else? The whole process. All right, why don't we write the process down now? And remember that chart I had when it goes crisscross? The crisscross chart? Where you're dealing with your own feelings and needs and others' feelings and needs, and then you get to strategy. Yeah, observation. That means observation is what stimulates a particular feeling. Instead of observation, okay, I guess we got to drill down on that one. Observation means just the facts. What happened? Just like if someone says to me, again, you boring old man, instead of my putting a judgment on that, saying that he angrily attacked me, I will say, he said 5 minutes ago, you're a boring old man. So an observation is basically just the facts, like a detective would go before someone and question someone, and they would say, just the facts, ma'am. When did it happen? What did they say? Not how did you feel about it, or what you think his motivation was, but just the facts. So, going back to that thing with the COVID again, someone said on the internet about me, you are a bogus guru. Okay. There's many things like that. So, let's say someone said that. They said, you're a bogus guru. So then I'll say, he said, I'm a bogus guru. And that stimulated, it's not the cause of my feelings, it stimulated a particular feeling. Didn't cause it. The cause is what? Does anyone remember what causes the feelings? The needs, met or unmet. So I'm taking responsibility. I'm not denying right here. So what else do you have there? Oh, so you have observations. Okay. And then, what is that? I can't read it.
Feelings,
okay. That's right. And so you say the observation or what you observed stimulated a particular feeling. And then, very interestingly enough, you go down to the needs. What is the need? It's a very simple process. You go down to the needs and you say, that's the cause, that need. And then, when you're dealing with yourself or with others, this is still the same thing, is strategies. What am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? Or what are you going to do about it? And interestingly enough, when you're being empathic with others, in many cases, you don't have to say anything. Because most communication is not the words, or not the words, but it's nonverbal, or the tone of voice, or body language. Actually, only something like 7 to 10% of communication is words. And that's another reason why you have so much fighting on the internet or fighting with emails. You'll see if you read, let's say, any statement, even on a news channel or a news website, that the comments will start off rather peacefully, and then they'll degenerate into just like ad hominem attacks. That means personal attacks. Because that's the nature of words themselves. Because words can be, without any context, without any tone of voice, without any body language, can mean anything, basically. Like if I say to someone, here's just the words, you are nice. So if I say it in one tone of voice, you're nice. That's actually very positive. If I say another tone, you are nice, like that, then it's very sarcastic. And I'm actually meaning the opposite thing. So people can take words in any way they want according to their understanding of the person or understanding of the situation. And that's why written communication is usually not a good way to solve any sort of conflict. And even Zoom is not such a great way either. And we've experienced that with certain issues we're trying to resolve in ISKCON, particularly this Vaishnavi Diksha Guru issue. And it's just like, even though you can see someone's face, it's not the same thing as when you're in the same room with them. And you really miss being in the same room with people. So what else do you have there? You have strategies.
And you make requests.
Yeah, requests. And requests when you're dealing with other people or requests from yourself, yeah. So does anyone have any questions about anything so far that I've said? I've just touched upon the basics. Yes.
You said trauma arises from denial of responsibility.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean that certain people blame their trauma for their actions, which they are able to control. You know, for example, I was traumatized. I mean, I'm not denying that people are traumatized and people suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, that would be silly for me to do that. No, trauma arises from traumatic experiences we've had before, and we react emotionally to those traumatic experiences. And one way to overcome this PTSD, one therapy, is to be aware of the needs that are connected with that, with the trauma. Let's say, I mean, for example, I'll give an example in my own life, one example I usually like to give, is that when I was young, I was traumatized by beats. Not really traumatized, by my mother. You know beets. She used to force me to eat beets, and in many cases, if I didn't eat what she wanted me to eat, she would dump things on my head. You know, very loving relationship. So then for years after that, every time I saw a beet, I mean, it sounds silly, but it actually was post-traumatic stress disorder. Every time I saw a beet, I would start to shake like that. And anytime someone wanted to offer it to me for prasadam, I thought they were my enemy. So then I actually connected that trauma, you know, with the idea of, you know, beets. The beets are stimulating a particular emotion, and that emotion, I guess, would be either fear, anger, like that, because I have a need for autonomy and need to choose what I want to eat, not be forced to eat. And then as soon as I dealt with it, now I eat beets. So, of course, that's a very simple thing. I'm not comparing that to trauma of someone who was abused or anything like that. But there are ways, utilizing the knowledge of feelings and needs, to eventually utilize this as a therapeutic approach to dealing with post-traumatic stress. Yes, there's post-traumatic stress, and some of it is really intense, like if someone goes to war, every time they hear a gun and they come back from the army, they, you know, they start shaking every time they hear a sharp sound. So it has been used, this particular technique or series of techniques have been used to help people with post-traumatic stress disorder. Yes, but it is a real thing. Post-traumatic stress is a real thing. But ultimately, if one takes responsibility and connects it to the need, not to deny it. You don't deny your feelings. That's a very important point you brought out, because in many cases, we're taught, even in ISKCON, to deny our feelings. You know, your feelings are Maya. Oops, what was that? I guess it was just someone. Taught that your feelings are Maya. You know, anger is Maya. Or what other feelings does anyone have? Tiredness is Maya. Embarrassment. You know, if you're tired during Bhagavatam class, it's Maya. No, maybe it's just boring. I mean, I like being honest. I mean, I sit in some Bhagavatam classes and I'm just praying for it to be over. Isn't it? I just thought, my dear Lord, he seems to be coming to an end now. And then he picks it up from that moment. Or please, no one ask a question. And you all feel like that. But very few of you are honest enough to say that. Part of being empathic is being very vulnerable, like what I'm talking about. Is I'm willing to say the way I feel, because I'm meeting my needs, and I don't really care if other people don't like it. So anyway, so let's talk about, all right, feeling. All right, got to go back. Feelings again, and all right. What was I talking about before? Yeah. Trauma. I know I was talking about trauma.
Accepting feelings, not denying.
Yeah, not denying feelings. Okay, thank you. So we're taught in many cases to deny our feelings. Like you're angry, that's Maya. Anger, lust, anger, and greed are three gateways leading to hell in Bhagavad Gita. So we're taught like that. But not in empathic communication, we're not taught that. And we're not taught to get angry. We're not taught to get lusty. But we're taught to get in touch with your feelings. You know, when you repress or suppress your feelings, then eventually they will come out in some way or other. I often use the example of a balloon. When you actually, ever see these people make little things out of balloons, like animals out of balloons? They actually push in one side and comes out another side. So the feelings are something like that. If I'm feeling angry, control yourself. Okay. And then sometimes it comes out internally and you take it out on yourself and you actually get sick. Repressed anger. And some people say that one of the causes of cancer, maybe not all the causes, is repressed anger, and repressed anger towards yourself. So therefore, what we teach in empathic communication is become aware of your feelings, even if it's anger or something that you would get criticized for, and connect it with the need. Don't necessarily have to express it, but don't repress or don't suppress. Suppress means you're aware of what you're doing. Repress means you're in denial of the particular feeling. So, yes, I am angry. Why am I angry? Take responsibility again. I am angry because I have a need for whatever. Like that. In this way, you're able to actually deal with anger and lust and greed, because these are simply feelings that indicate needs. It's not a problem. Then anger is no longer a problem. You can control. You don't control anger. You diffuse it by understanding the connected need. Does anyone have any questions about that? Questions about anything? Yes.
I have a few things.
Okay.
The intensity of feelings that get exhibited because of an unmet need, or a met need for that matter,
yeah,
is what are some dynamics that play into the intensity of the feeling?
It depends on how much the need is met or unmet, and how much we're engaging in these particular activities of deserve or denial, like that. I think there's many different factors that determine the intensity of the feeling. And in empathic communication, we're, at least the training that we have is to immediately connect, take responsibility, forget about connecting right now, but take responsibility for the feeling. Don't blame others. Don't deny responsibility. This is a really important thing. Don't say, you made me angry. You're disturbing me. Immediately, I'm responsible for this anger. Now, what need is there? Because when you go into these four D's of discommunication, then you, yes, you may increase the intensity of the anger or whatever feelings you're having. So I think it's a little complicated. But basically, we're blaming the other. We're demanding your business is to do this. You deserve to be punished for this. You're a rascal. I mean, it's all connected to these four D's of discommunication, the intensity of the feeling. Now we're talking about, I wouldn't say a negative feeling. I don't like to label feelings negative or positive. I would say an unpleasant feeling. An unpleasant feeling is usually coming from needs not met. And how we deal with it determines the intensity, like Jayato Vishak Pumsam Sango Stesha Vajayate. When we contemplate not only a sense object, but contemplate any of these particular things, you're supposed to do that, we get more attached to that conception. In many ways, we obsess on things. Just like there's a disease, obsessive compulsive. So we obsess on things. You're supposed to do that. You're really supposed to do this. You have to do it. And then it becomes more intense. I think, to answer your question now that I thought of it, I think obsession is actually a large part of it. That it becomes like a broken record that plays in our minds. Yeah, you are a rascal. You're really a rascal. I hate you. I really hate you. So, yeah, we go through all these and we obsess on all of them. And then increases the feelings. And what I do is I try not to obsess on things. I mean, I see this with devotees many, many times. Like some devotees, even in another issue, some devotees will come up to me saying, I'm having a really hard time in Krishna consciousness. I've never really had such a hard time. This is the worst time I've had in Krishna consciousness. It's really bad. I've never been in such maya before. And I'm thinking, oh my God, stop right there. So how do you deal with someone like that? You can't tell them, oh no, you're having a good time. Because you're actually denying their own feelings. You encourage them to deny your own feelings. I would say, well, I would reflect their feelings. You know, you're feeling that you're in Maya. And, you know, what sort of... Of course, you want to be Krishna conscious, obviously, or else you wouldn't have told me you were in Maya. So what is your strategy? I mean, what do you hope to do to get yourself out of it? And let people take responsibility. We got another question.
I do. So the makeup of each individual is really fascinating. In the
yes.
sense of how these needs are within each one of us.
Right.
And how they get morphed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one thought, as I think about and have been thinking about Maslow's hierarchy,
yeah.
is that the more, you know, ultimately the more advancement one makes, is it true then that the lower needs, the intensity of lower needs start to reduce and these higher needs start to grow?
That is an interesting question, a very interesting question, which I've thought about quite a bit, and I've seen with people who are absolutely pure devotees, yes. Yes, I mean, actually probably even says that, but I've seen with most of us who are actually have a conception of ourselves as being more advanced than we actually are, that's really not a relevant question. because we are not that advanced. And if we think we're that advanced, then we're not that advanced anyway. It is an interesting question. And I've seen many devotees who thought that they were more advanced than they actually were in denial about some basic needs, and ultimately it comes out. And they may deviate from Krishna consciousness. So I think it's what you're saying is ultimately true, but I think it's dangerous to propagate it. And I think it's to propagate it as referring or in reference to ourselves. I think in reference to someone like Prabhupada, yes. But at the same time, Prabhupada did show, in order to keep his body together, you know, he did take care of his basic bodily needs. Prabhupada took a massage for several hours a day. Prabhupada took his walk every day. He exercised every day. I mean, Prabhupada had a massage at noontime. He kept one devotee, practically Shutakirti, his main business was massaging Prabhupada. And Prabhupada always had his own cook. Prabhupada had a need for had a sense of humor. And so Prabhupada's own... I'm not saying that Prabhupada was controlled by any of these lower needs, he certainly was not. But Prabhupada was showing an example for us on how to be well-balanced in dealing with our needs. And I've just seen that it's a real tendency amongst devotees to think of themselves as being more advanced than they actually are and out of touch with their needs. And it creates a dysfunction in our society. And I'm not just talking about sannyasis, I'm talking about all sorts of devotees on all levels who think of themselves. I mean, you know, I'd like to think of myself as a coward boy or a gopi or what else? A grass Vrindavan. You know, it's almost like a sahaja tendency. I think we should just think of ourselves as, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Mama Nivedana Shuno, Vishaya Durjana. And I do have these needs. I mean, I just myself, I have a need for fun, I have a need for laughter, humor, everybody knows about. I have a need for tasty food, even though it's kasha. Yeah, it's funny, I mean, your children were just saying, you eat like that every day. I could see they were feeling so much compassion for me. You poor guy, you know. And then I had to assure them that, you know, every morning I take a little cacao, you know, chocolate. And they said, oh, thank God you're not, like, so bad. So, yeah, no, I see a lot of, like, agitated devotees who are in denial of their needs, a lot of devotees who are just in spiritual danger. So I think we should just be practical.
Part of the question is coming from, you know, in third chapter of Gita, Krishna explains how to control lust, right? And at the end of the chapter he says, by the use of intelligence.
Intelligence, yes.
And so the thought process is my own, you know, understanding my own makeup of needs.
Yeah.
To help, while satisfying the needs, or trying to find strategies, to try to direct, you know.
Dovetail.
For the higher needs.
So yeah.
Feed the higher needs.
Feed the higher needs without being. Yes, that's very good. Everything. The lower needs can be fulfilled. I don't even want to say lower. Let's say basic. Lower is a pejorative.
Yeah.
I hate to use that word. The basic needs can be fulfilled in a way that they support the higher need. You know, dovetailing like that. Like we eat prasadam. You know, eating is not a... Well, I don't want to say higher or lower. Eating is not the need for self-realization. But you can utilize it as a tool to become self-realized if you eat prasadam. And all these different lower needs. But sometimes we just have a need to play for the sake of playing. And there's no way of dovetailing it in Krishna consciousness except, you know, it just keeps my mind peaceful. I need to play. I mean, it's just like, it's practical, and we need, you know, it's like sporting activities. Devotees say you don't need to do any sports. I mean, today I went bicycle riding, I don't know if that's a sport. But why not? I mean, why should we, and we try to impose that on some of our early Guru Kul students. You know, why do you need to play? It's Maya. So sometimes certain things just can't be dovetailed, but by doing them, it makes us more peaceful so we can continue in Krishna. And that way it's a sort of indirect dovetailing. You know, prasadam is a direct dovetailing, but other things like, you know, we have a need for play. So if some devotee plays, I don't know what, cricket, you like to play cricket? No?
So, I cricket.
You do?
I'm not. You're not. I like tennis, badminton.
All right. Tennis or badminton or, you know, I was talking the other day and I said, I like to speed in the car. And I got a ticket. One of the first times I drove the Tesla, a lot of everybody's heard this already, I was going twice the speed limit. I thought, this is fun. Because this car goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, you know. And then all of a sudden I see these lights behind me. Oh, Krishna, Krishna. But it didn't work. Protect me, Lord Nrisimha. And it didn't. The police got... Here's a ticket. You know, twice the speed limit. Then I had to, instead of praying to the Lord in Shinganeva, I had to go to my lawyer. It was more effective than Lord in Shinganeva. So, you know, I had fun. What can I say, you know? I had fun for the sake of fun. I'm not going to do that again, obviously. But sometimes we just do things for the sake of fun, because we have that need for fun. Or for rest. Of course, obviously, you say you rest until you have strength to serve Krishna the next day. But it's not that we just have to feel so guilty that everything... What happened there?
The camera went out.
We're still online, but the camera went out. It's not that you have to feel so guilty. Whoops. Should I go on pause or should I?
No, somebody's asked a question. Maharaj, could you repeat?
They're asking to repeat the questions that we're asking in the room so that they better understand.
Okay. All right, so you want to, when we want to start with the question about strong emotions first? No, I know the question. You know, what causes the emotions to get stronger?
Yeah.
And then my answer to that for everybody online was that we actually think about that, about our emotions. We obsess about a particular emotion or a particular thing that happened more and more, and that based upon these four D's of discommunication, as a quick answer. So what was the other question you asked?
How the makeup of the needs.
Yeah, the needs, okay. So, as far as possible. Let's see what's happening there. Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, now it's on the camera and the computer. You don't have a charger on your camera?
I bought the charger, but I didn't charge.
Okay. Okay. So, anyway, so the question was about the needs, using the needs in a dovetailing way to become Krishna conscious. And my answer was, that is actually good if we can use a particular need like prasadam in a dovetailing way to become Krishna conscious. But at the same time, sometimes different needs can be fulfilled that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Just to keep... I'm really small there. You gonna switch the camera? You don't want that one. That's my. You don't want to use that. That's something really funny that you don't want.
Is that evil or lying?
No. It's not. It's Lumi.
Lumi Live.
Yeah, Lumi Live, which gives me an avatar, which I use on some of my Zoom conferences. You don't want to use that one. Then if you go to Lumi Live, I'll just be an avatar. That'll look really funny. Do you have a charger for your...
Yes, Mother. So, yes, I'm having some issue.
What?
We're having some issue with the charging.
Oh, you're having some issue with the charging. Anyway, just use that camera. It's all right. That's camera. It's fine. Just use the internal camera. It's just right now. It'll be fine. So sometimes we just have to... So the question was about fulfilling needs, and should we fulfill the needs always that are connected with Krishna, or help us be Krishna conscious. And my answer was that sometimes needs just to fulfill, just so we're stable and steady in Krishna consciousness, like having fun, recreation. Like you talk about, you know, playing tennis, badminton, or something like that. I mean, it's hard to connect that directly to Krishna consciousness unless you hit the ball, Krishna. Krishna, I'm sure you don't do that. Maybe you do. Like Prabhupada actually talked about one game that children would play called kick, kick. I don't know, where you would just like kick and say Krishna every time you kick the ball, the soccer ball. But I think we have to be practical and not too fanatic. You know, I don't say I do a lot of things not connected with Krishna, but I do a lot of things, not a lot of things. I do some things like just for fun. Just for fun, you know. Like going too fast in the car, just for fun. Or other things, you know, going for a run, going to see, the other day I went on a canoe, and it was fun. Of course, you know, as a great devotee, I saw Krishna everywhere, saw everything in Krishna, and Krishna was never lost to me, nor I was ever lost to him. You know, 6:30 in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, I have to cover myself. You know, anyway. But it was fun. I was paddling. We have a canoe on our property. So I was paddling the canoe, and I was thinking, boy, this is so much fun, it should be illegal. You know, it's having fun. So I think, you know, fun, recreation, or recreation is sometimes mentioned. It's actually helpful to be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer the question? Or? Yeah. And when possible, we can dovetail things, you know, like we do eat prasadam. I'm not going to go eat bhoga just because it's fun. But we, you know, when possible, we dovetail things in Krishna consciousness. Actually, this camera works better than your camera.
Wait, I have one more question.
Yeah, sure.
So it seems to me, you know, as I personally tried to apply this, these principles several years now, that a jugular thing is being vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's not so easy to come by.
It's very difficult.
And I've seen, like, you know, there's a model that I particularly like of team building. And
yeah.
Really, that would probably apply to any kind of group of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the five dysfunctions of a team.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom rung, the foundation for that is vulnerable leaders.
Yes.
And the inability to be vulnerable is a strong block.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's kind of shocking in one sense too.
You want me to actually translate, not translate, but to convey that to everybody online?
I mean, maybe in brief they might need that.
But. Yeah. So the point is the inability. You could actually, it's good when you turn the computer around so you can see when someone's asking a question. But anyway, not now because I'm talking. So, so, you know, vulnerability is actually a really big issue, and it was pointed out in team building, that's the number one issue, being vulnerable. And it's a challenge, particularly, forgive me if I get too cultural, but it's a challenge in Indian culture quite a bit. I would say more than in Western culture because for a variety of, boy, I don't want to get into this one, but anyway, for a variety of reasons, like there's some training amongst a lot of people to never say that you were wrong about something. And I attribute that to a large extent, I mean, not just in India, but to traditional cultures where if you ever did something wrong, you would get spanked or beaten or chastised severely. even, you know, just by saying, oh, I'm sorry, I did it, you still deserve to be beaten. So I've seen, like, sometimes I'm in India and I'll ask someone for directions and they'll give me the wrong directions just because they don't want to say they don't know. Do you ever have that experience? I mean, whereas in America, sometimes we say, yeah, we don't know. I mean, we're more likely to be vulnerable. But let's just broaden that as far as vulnerability. The question is, how to develop that vulnerability? And the answer, in my mind, is to be able to fulfill all your needs yourself and not be dependent on other people to fulfill the needs. Because if we're actually dependent upon what other people think of us to fulfill our needs, then we're not going to be vulnerable. We're going to be always scared of revealing more. I mean, like you see, I even talk about, you know, my Maya, my so-called Maya, because it's all pastime. It's just, it's not really Maya, you know. Like when I came from the spiritual world, you know, it's just, even my pastime of being a nonsense for 21 years. It's all just a pastime of an interested devotee coming down. So anyways, no. But I don't know. The more you hide aspects of yourself from others, the more you're just going to be nervous and anxiety all the time. And then you won't develop true relationships with other people. You're talking about team building there. You can't really develop a team or have a relationship with anyone in a deep sense unless you're actually able to admit your own issues, problems, mistakes, and take responsibility.
Admit one's own needs.
Yeah, one's needs. Yeah, oh yeah. Then people call you needy. Yeah. I have a need for fun. You are needy. I mean, you see that oftentimes that the ladies will say, you know, I have a need for appreciation or I need for you to listen to me. You ever heard that one? You never listen to me. And I'm not saying anyone here does that. But anyway, so you're so needy. The men will naturally think that about the women. She's so needy. But she's also making a demand. Yeah. I have a need. No, actually the need isn't for someone to a particular individual, for a particular individual to listen to you. Your need is for it to have someone listen to you. And it's up to you to come up with a strategy to find that someone who will listen to you, even if your husband won't listen to you. You know, so that is also a demand too. But the point is, even if I reveal, like, my need, I have a need for fun and recreation and laughter and everything like that, a lot of devotees will say, that's Maya. You know, why should you have that need? You know, I'm tired, I have a need for sleep. That's Maya. Sleeping, Prabhupada said, sleeping is Maya. You know, so they'll use Prabhupada's quotes against you. So there's a culture of denial of needs in our society to a certain extent.
And in, you know, in pastoral care education, one of the things that we've learned is that if people start saying things like that, that usually means they have unresolved emotions themselves or they're not in touch with their own needs.
In other words, they're communicating. You know, if they say, I have a need for this or I have a need for that. Is that what you're saying?
No, the people who might label, oh, you're Maya.
Oh, yeah, the people who are labeling.
Yeah.
They themselves are not
it's immediately apparent that they're not in
touch with
them.
Yeah, that's projection.
You, you're Maya, whatever.
Atmavat manyate jagat. Yeah. Yeah, so they themselves are out of touch with their own needs. And ultimately, those needs will cause them either physical problems or psychological problems or spiritual problems. Haven't we seen so many people just like explode in the past? And are moving, you know, someone seems to be doing so well, he's a great leader, or great sannyasi, whatever, and all of a sudden, boom! How could he have done that? Well, because he was in denial of those needs. And there are strategies to fulfill a need that are in accordance with your varna or your ashram. You know, sometimes people become fixed with just one strategy and they don't want to think outside the box. Like saying, you know, you may have like a brahmachari, say, I have a need for love. I need to get married. No, he has a need for love. Maybe he just needs to get a dog. I'm not saying anything against marriage. I'm just saying. But I've seen people fulfilled just by getting a pet. And that's actually interesting, too, that there's many statistics, which I cite in the book, that people who have loving relationships, and actually the statistics, the people who have pets live longer than, on an average, than people who don't have pets. I'm not advocating that you all run out and get a pet. Well, there's an interesting discussion I had with one young man the other day. I was giving a evening program, and he wanted me to counteract his parents' instructions. It was on Zoom. I was in Sacramento, and he said, "Maharaj, can I have a pet?" And you know, and he wanted me to just say, "Yes, it's a good idea." And instead, I actually took it very philosophically. I said, it's actually natural for children and actually all of us to interact with animals, because the natural environment for people is to be brought up in a village where you're interacting with animals all the time. And the reason people want pets nowadays is because they've been brought up in a very unnatural environment in the city. It's not unnatural to want a pet. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just we're living in an unnatural environment. And, you know, because you always hear these things and the parents tell their children, it's moochy. Pets are moochy. I'm not advocating. I don't think your children are listening to this. No. You locked them upstairs. So they can't hear what I was saying. So it's moochy. It's bad. Ew! Like that. But it's actually quite natural. To interact with animals is actually a human need. I came to that conclusion because human beings are meant to live in an environment where they have cows and, you know, other animals. I'm not talking about dogs. But I'm sure some of you were brought up in a village, right? Any of you were here, were brought up in a village? No? With cows? No one? You're all city people? Yeah. So wasn't that very, so when you were a child, you actually interacted with cows a lot, right? Wasn't that very satisfying and soothing for the heart when you were doing that?
I was too young.
Too young?
4, 6 years, or 7 years.
Oh, then you went to the city after that. After 6 or only before 6?
Before 6.
But you don't remember what happened before 6.
We used to play with them and we used to go actually to the pasture dogs with them.
Yeah, so you like that, right?
Yeah.
So that was my point. So it's natural. So here we have a natural phenomena or a natural need of human beings. And somehow or other, because of modern society, we're not able to fulfill that particular need. It's interesting. I just found it quite interesting. I'm not saying you have to go out and get pets. But I'm just saying that there's different needs that are not being fulfilled. And of course, nowadays, you buy the children little dolls, you know, what are they, Kewpie dolls, or even the devotees bought me a talking cow the other day. There's talking cow. It's true. I mean, they bought me a cow, I just press it, and it talks and sings and everything. And it fulfills my need. So anyway, we do have these needs for, you know, all these different needs. Does that answer the question? Or you, any other questions you have? Those are good questions. Any other questions? Anyone else has questions?
Gopal Kohan Das has a question.
Okay. Gopal Kohan? Oh, that's I know him. Yeah, so what question does he have?
He wants to ask it.
Okay, go ahead and ask it. I can't read it from here, so maybe you can read it.
It's not that
good. You can speak up. No,
let him write it. I think it's better rather than having him speak it up, because I put him on mute.
Okay.
Otherwise, we'll hear everybody asking questions.
He says, you answered it, Gurudev.
Oh, I answered it. Okay. Answer the question. Yes?
I have a question about when we make an observation, Maharaj.
Yeah.
And somebody, we want to make an observation about somebody who's yelling or screaming or talking
yeah.
too loud. Observation. Because, you know, I'm not recording decibels. So I can say, you spoke louder than your usual.
No, that's kind of mechanistic, you know.
I'll make an observation about that.
When you said this, it really hurt my ears.
Okay.
It was painful. I felt pain.
But
that's not an observation, but I would say just when you said this in a louder voice than normal.
Okay.
Louder voice than normal. Rather than say you were screaming. Or maybe not even address the volume. Just when you said this, how were you feeling? Rather than just like addressing the volume. Because that's really a subjective type of thing. When you said, you know, I hate your guts, how were you feeling? Angry. Oh. Do you have a need to punch someone? And obviously, if they're angry, you can empathize with them just with body language. Because using that particular nomenclature, the particular system of saying, when you saw this, did you feel this? Do you have a need for that? Will drive people completely crazy. So I don't advocate doing that. I advocate doing it internally, and then whatever comes out, not in a mechanistic way, from your mouth or from your body language, will usually be the right thing. Usually, using words in those particular circumstances will actually exacerbate the situation or the relationship or make it worse. So anyway, so let's talk more about vulnerability. I think that was a very interesting point you made about being vulnerable. Being ready, maybe not to admit to the whole world your problems, issues, challenges, feelings, needs, but it starts with yourself. Being vulnerable with yourself. Admitting that you're fallible. Admitting that you have all those needs. All those needs each and every one of us has. I guarantee. Maybe if you're a pure devotee, the needs are expressed in a little bit different way. But I guarantee that each and every person here has every single one of those needs and some of the needs I didn't even mention. I have a need for recreation. I have a need for loving relationships. I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a sannyasi. I'm happy being a sannyasi. And I don't have a pet. But I have, you know, loving relationships with the devotees. You know, I'm talking to you. I'm feeling reciprocation. People cook for me. I feel reciprocation. That's, to me, that's very satisfying. And, you know, I have friendship. I have friendships amongst many of my godbrothers. My best friend was Bhakti Chur Maharaj. He passed away, and that was very painful for me, you know, losing someone who I was very close to. And that pain, you celebrate that pain, not in the sense that you're happy that he passed away, but you actually celebrate in the sense you reveal it. He says, pain is very painful for me. I was in the conference of Bhakti Chur Maharaj's disciples because I was helping counsel them in the beginning. I was just explaining my feelings, and they very much appreciated that. So one has to be honest with themselves before being vulnerable with others. And it's really hard to admit that you're not what you would like to be. You know, we have this overinflated conception of ourselves. Here's a diagnosis again. I'm a great devotee. I'm a Prabhupada disciple. You know, I'm a senior devotee. You know, I just don't put a diagnosis on myself. Except, you know, Gopi Bharata Padakama Dasa Dasa Dasana Dasa. I'm a servant, trying to be a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. But I don't know. Every time you put it, you diagnose yourself, then you get to the point that you're in denial of your needs and you're not vulnerable anymore. Like I said, all these things are so much connected here. Like, what do we think about ourselves? You know, and we did that exercise with someone else. So, you know, why don't we do the exercise? Everybody come up with a word about themselves, a diagnosis. Okay, why don't we do that for a minute? You got 1 minute. I demand it. If you don't do it, you're failing this course. And I will be very disappointed with you. That's like parents do, isn't it? I'm really disappointed with you. I expected more from you than this. I spent so many years... Oh! Lord Nityananda. So... the guilt trips, you know, I spent so many years raising you in Krishna consciousness. I carried you in my womb from when you were a little baby. I struggled, sent you to school, went into debt, and look what you've done to me. Anyway, so, all right, so let's give each other a label.
Ourselves.
Yeah, right, off the top of the head. Okay, let's go around the room. Everyone has to do it. Has to. All right. Yeah.
Right now my mind is thinking of offensive.
You're offensive. Okay. That's a wonderful label to have. Okay, but labels are good. Here's another point. I'm turning the tables on you. I said don't diagnose, but now I'm saying labels are good. Okay, so you're offensive. You're thinking you're offensive. You're putting that label on you. So why, let's go to why you think that. What need do you have?
Need for understanding.
A need for understanding. So you have a need for understanding. And that's why you're thinking yourself as being offensive. Interesting. So how do you feel about yourself now that you understand the need connected with the diagnosis?
Accepting of myself.
Yeah. See, it's really, really interesting. So in the beginning I said we have to avoid these things. And now I am saying you have to become aware of those things. They're blocks in communication. But when they occur, they're indications of a need that's met or unmet. That's interesting. Okay, so when we go around the room, what's the next one?
Self-critical.
You are self-critical. Okay, and see if we can connect a need to that one. What's the need? If you have to go through this whole list of needs.
Need for like acceptance.
Acceptance and appreciation. Yeah. That's interesting. Okay. Next.
Looking for fun.
You're a fun-loving person. Well, that's easy. You need for fun. That's an easy one. So you could transform the diagnosis. Then you can actually dissolve the diagnosis like you could dissolve anger by going to the need. But be aware of the diagnosis because it gives you a stepping stone. It gives you an indication of what needs you have that are unmet. And you have a need for fun. When was the last time you did something for fun? Don't remember. No. See that?
Then I went for that in India.
How long ago was that?
2018.
Oh. So 2018, that's a long time to not have any fun. So there's definitely a need for fun. Was that your marriage? From my perspective, marriages are not fun. Anyway, they're boring. You know, I've been in so many of these marriages, and the men, they sit in the back just talking about something else during the marriage, and the women are having fun. Isn't it? The men are sitting in the back feeling bored with the marriage.
Marriage, they always do.
Yeah, and
the men have fun, I said they always do.
Yeah. And the women are crying, having fun crying, actually. I see that and go, ooh, isn't this so sweet? So your idea of fun is different than mine. That's okay. Can you imagine? Crying in a marriage. Yeah, so, all right. So, okay, what's the next?
For me, what comes failure.
Failure, you're a failure. And what need would you connect with that?
Need to satisfy in me.
Yeah.
So that's the need. I don't feel satisfied just by me. You know, in me. I look outward.
Yeah. But also, what do you think about a need for appreciation?
Yeah, I don't appreciate myself. So.
Appreciate yourself. What about other people appreciating you? You don't buy it.
I don't believe usually. Maybe
you're in denial of a need. Because we have a need for other people to appreciate us. Not just ourselves. See? You have a need, but you're thinking that's Maya. Or you're thinking you're in denial. What do you think about other people appreciate?
Her, that she
doesn't
believe they appreciate.
Oh, you don't believe they appreciate you. Oh, but you have a need for that.
No. They appreciate, but I know who I am, so I don't take it in. You know?
Oh, so you have a need for self-appreciation. appreciation. And actually, I wrote an article about many years ago that people hated. It was about how we should love ourselves. I got so many bad comments about that because they said, this is really Maya to love yourself. But then I pointed out that we're supposed to love all living entities and we happen to be a living entity. So self-love is not bad. We actually should love ourselves as part and parcels of Krishna. I'm not talking about false ego or thinking yourself so great, but actually, you know, I'm part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna loves me. Okay. Hey, Mangi? Yeah.
I love myself.
You love yourself. That's good.
That's the first part that comes.
Well, that's actually good. That's a feeling, you know. That's a feeling. That is actually wonderful. All right, next, Radhika.
Persistent.
You're persistent. Determined. Persistent. What is it? I'm trying to think of some other word for that. Persistent, determined,
stubborn.
Obnoxious.
No, I'm persistent.
Persistent. And so what need would you connect with that?
Need for accomplishments.
Need for accomplishment. All right, good. That's good. So you say, I have a need to accomplish something. In what way? Why do you want to accomplish something? Let's dive deeper into that.
I feel joyful when I'm able to accomplish or be persistent at something.
Why?
Meaning,
okay, good. Okay, so we got to, one thing I just did is it, you know, wasn't really a need for accomplishment, it was a need for meaning. Because I just felt when you said accomplishment, it just didn't really strike me. So a need for meaning, which is actually really important, to have a meaningful existence. Very good, very good. So what we do sometimes is when someone says something and they don't really, or you think something and you don't really connect with the need, that's not actually a need, you can use the why question. Why did you do this? You know, or why do you think that that's your need? And then you go down deeper and you actually find the real need behind it. So it's a need for meaning in life. That's very good. That's very good. So now when you think of yourself as someone who really wants to have a meaning in your life, do you still use the word persistent so much on yourself anymore?
I think of it as in a good sense.
Yeah.
Persistence or determination helps stick with
the meaning, yeah. But are you persistent or is that some quality you manifest to achieve a particular...
Yeah, it's quality I manifest.
That you manifest to achieve a particular need, to satisfy a particular need. It's good.
The need is probably self-worth.
Self-worth. Self-worth, yes, that's another one, self-worth. So you have a need for self-worth,
yes.
And in order to fulfill that need, you're very persistent. You are not persistent.
Yeah.
You know, that's not your identity.
Yes.
Because sometimes, I'm sure you're not persistent 24 hours a day.
It would be exhausting.
So it's not really you.
Yes.
That's not really the diagnosis. Good. Okay, next.
Traumatic.
Okay. And what need would you connect with that?
Need for relief.
For peace, relief. Good. Good. Yeah, so you have... So the more we concentrate on the need, the less we will be thinking of the diagnosis. And then the more functional, then we'll come up with more strategies. Because there are sometimes unlimited strategies to fulfill a particular need. It's not only one strategy. Like I mentioned, the need for love, you know, getting a pet, but... There's other strategies too, you know. That's not the only one. So one really should have a complete menu of different strategies to fulfill needs. And also, when you're thinking of strategies, this gets a little more complicated. One should think of a strategy that fulfills a particular need but doesn't interfere with other needs. So it's a little holistic there. In other words, I can pick a strategy that would fulfill one particular need, but may not fulfill another need. You know, like my strategy of having fun by speeding in a car. And that was a great strategy. But it didn't fulfill my need for, security or... Actually, I was in complete anxiety for peace, you know, for 2 days after that. For 2 days, I even looked at my watch to see how my heart was doing, and it was skipping beats. Because that's the first time that happened to me in over 50 years. You know, it was traumatic. So in other words, that strategy didn't work. So now I have to figure out another strategy. Like go to Germany and go on the Autobahn. Where there's no speed limit. So anyway, so you really have to be careful when you're picking strategies to think holistically. Not to interfere with other needs. Okay. Oh, missed our cameraman there. You don't really need to be behind the camera anymore. You even need to hide.
Need to hide, Maharaj.
What diagnosis?
Things are not working, so feeling like confusion, failure, things like
that. So you think of you're putting a diagnosis, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
Because of the camera and stuff and everything. So what need do you have?
I'm not in touch with my
at this point. Okay, let's try to guess. You have a need to contribute?
Contribute for sure.
Yeah. So you have a need to contribute. And somehow or other, the camera didn't help you with that need to contribute. But we love you anyway. But it also, it's very satisfying to admit that it just didn't work. I made a mistake. And everybody appreciates that. You say, I made a mistake, you know. But it's hard. It's hard to admit that you made a mistake. But you didn't. I mean, I appreciate you came, you tried your best, and that's a success in Krishna's eyes. So how do you feel?
feel good. But I have a need for perfection, so...
You have a need for perfection. That's a new one. All right, let me ask you why. Why do you have a... Why do you say you have a need for perfection?
There should be a brand.
Should be a brand?
Brand, like, you know, when...
You want to brand yourself?
When we do something, it needs to be done nicely.
Yeah. Well, I guess you just want to be God or something. I said it perfectly. Why? Let me keep asking you why. Why do you say that?
Maybe I was not accepted.
You have a need for acceptance, a real big need for acceptance. I would say, you know, if I had to guess. And acceptance is based upon what you do rather than who you are. And, you know, I don't want to get into childhood stuff, but it comes from there, this sort of thing that acceptance and love is conditional. This is part, you know, when you raise children, if you make your love conditional upon what they do rather than who they are, then at that point, you know, then it's like a disconnect for the person. So love should always be causeless in any sort of relationship, especially mother and father, a mother, father, parents like that. Like getting back to what I talked about with my schooling, when I would do badly in school, my mother would say, "This is not the report card of my son." And, you know, I heard that as rejection. So we have to be careful about that. So, yes, you have a need for acceptance, self-acceptance for who you are. That's a really big need for who you are, just for yourself. And, you know, think about it. Think about it, because self-acceptance for who you are, just being yourself. And it's a hard one. That's really hard. Okay. Next.
So, I love people who are more open. Like, I'm also like that. So it's like more transparency is what I think my need is in relationships.
You like transparent.
Yeah,
good.
Very much.
So you have a need. So that's good. You went directly to need for a transparent, open, honest relationship.
Yes.
You have a need for honesty.
I feel suffocating if even I am, let's say I am angry at someone. Unless I tell that person, I will not feel like relief. So it's immediate, my reaction is go to that person, tell that why I'm feeling like that, even angry or even like happy, mm-hmm. both. So my, even I expect those from my relationships, I think.
That's good. Sounds like you're an American. Some of us are, you know. But this is really open. That's good. That's good. Need for honesty. Okay. Who's next? Okay.
Lately, I have been labeling myself as a father. More and more, because my son is going to high school this year. And I was just reflecting back. Supporting properly all this while.
Good.
And did I take care of him? Is he ready to go? I'm more anxious than him. So I'm always thinking, did I do my job properly?
Yeah, so you have the need to protect him and guide him a need for his safety, his need for his future. These are all important needs. Generally, needs aren't focused on a particular individual, except in the case of parents and children, because that relationship is very tight. You know, I have a need for your safety, I have a need. But, you know, some stranger comes up to me and says, Maharaj, I have a need for your safety. I said, take care of yourself. But for a parent, it's actually an appropriate thing to be focused on the need for someone's welfare. But not, I have a need for you to become a doctor. That's not, because that's actually on yourself rather than on the other person. Okay, next. Label?
Anger.
What's that?
Anger.
You're an angry person.
Not angry, like diagnose.
Diagnose anger. Yeah, and why?
Need for recognizing my activities and appreciating
others. Appreciating others. Why?
It's need of myself, like need of appreciation.
Need of appreciation. It's good. What about Nityananda?
Maharaj, I label that I'm fun-loving.
Fun-loving? We had one of those before. So that's good. You have a need for fun.
And it is also one of my strategies to have fulfill my need for peace, I guess.
Peace.
Whenever I feel stressed, I want to have fun because it sort of counteracts or helps me get out of that situation. But in general, I'm a fun, that's my thing for dealing with whatever I'm dealing with. I like to have fun as a way of enjoying life.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that one.
Yeah,
okay. Next.
I'm confused.
Confused. Have you put that label on yourself?
I'm trying to understand all that material. And
oh, okay. Well, that's a situational title. It takes time. And tomorrow, tomorrow we'll go over it in a more simplistic way, I think. What we went over today, because I think for some of you it's the first time you've heard this discussion. Okay, that's good. Next.
That's what I said. Need to be understood.
You have a need to be understood. Good.
The new one which I'm contemplating after discussion is vulnerability, to be vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, that's not the need. Like,
need to trust and be trusted.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
You first asked the question, several things came to my mind, but I think one thing I'll share is a label that I put on myself internally is weak.
Weak.
Yeah. And my need is, the need I have is to be, self-actualization maybe? It's, be a better self.
Better self, yeah.
Than what I currently am. There's acceptance in that weakness, though.
Yeah, when you say weak, it usually involves other people or something like that.
No, weakness and inability to follow through with my ideals.
Oh. Need for self-action, for Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness. It's good. Actually, that's the humility of a Vaishnava.
That's reality.
All right, any other questions before we end tonight?
There's a question from the chat.
Yeah, okay. What's it say? I can't read it.
I think it's Easter chicken.
Ishwar Chaitanya. What's he doing up at this time of night?
No, it's from Queenie Wynn.
Queenie.
I have a question. One should be more humble than a blade of grass, more
yes.
tolerant than a tree. Offer respect to all and expect none in return. So does this relate to whether we should fulfill our needs, especially with the quality of tolerance? Or how does this relate to whether we should fulfill our needs, especially with the quality of tolerance?
Well, I mean, first of all, it means being vulnerable. I mean, humility actually means, one sense to think less, not think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less. That's an interesting expression. Well, which camera you have on now?
It's perfect.
Perfect. Now I look brighter. Effulgent or something like that. So, I think the more one is vulnerable, understanding who they are and being ready to admit it to themselves at least, then humility develops in the heart. The problem is, one reason we're not humble is that we actually think more of ourselves than, you know, we think more highly of ourselves than we actually are. We think we're more advanced than we actually are in Krishna consciousness or even in the material sphere. So one just, I think honesty helps one become humble. And then also, manina manadena, being ready to render service to others, all others. I mean, that's what the verse states. Trinadapi sunichena tarodi vasihishana. Amanina manadena kirtani asadahari. So thinking oneself a servant of others, seeing the good qualities in others, not diagnosing others, understanding that everyone is at least devotees or sincere people are searching to become Krishna conscious or to understand God and just be ready to serve all others. And being vulnerable to admit one's own faults and one's issues. Does that make sense? Okay, what are the questions we have? Yes.
Maharaj, when I labeled myself as offensive,
yeah.
And I found like two different needs behind that one feeling. Mm. So there can be multiple needs behind one.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
So then until we really meet those few different needs, this is not going to resolve, is it? Or...
To resolve the diagnosis, we need to be aware of the needs surrounding it. And that'll help resolve whatever diagnosis we have on ourselves. Good. Good. I mean, you can't be too fanatic about it, you know. Like spend the next 5 years going through all the all the needs you have is I got to get rid of this diagnosis. You know, just as we say, chill out, you know. You know, just maybe not be so intense about it. Just understand I have this need, be aware of the need, and once you're aware of it, then I think almost automatically you will come up with some strategy. The whole point is awareness. And not thinking that one particular desire is the only strategy for filling a particular need, but being aware of the need, and then you'll come up with some strategy that doesn't interfere with other needs. Does that make sense? Okay, tomorrow, all right, what should we do tomorrow? Just dive into it a little bit more simply for everybody, or or exercises, or go through some of the other chapters here. Exercise. Yeah, tomorrow we'll go through exercise, more exercises.
We do have some people coming tomorrow evening, Maharaj, that are not here today.
Oh.
And who have never attended your seminar.
Uh-oh.
Should we make an arrangement for microphones to be passed around so that people...
Yeah, that's a good idea. How are we going to do that? Yeah, I mean, I have a microphone. Everyone could hear me clearly online.
But we'll have to connect the microphone to a mixer, and the mixer goes into your computer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how to do it. Do you have a mixer?
Yes, maybe we have.
Okay, yeah, we'll figure that. We have two microphones, one that goes around and one that's here, and they'll both go into a mixer, and the mixer will go into the computer. Okay, I think we're going to end now. Is that all right? Then we'll see everybody tomorrow night, same time, same station. All right, thank you all for coming, and it's nice to see everybody. And tomorrow we'll be meeting with some people individually, right? Okay, you'll arrange that sometime tomorrow. Okay, all glories to Prabhupada. You could take me offline.
Yeah, it's Prabhupada.
Would you be willing to sign books for anybody who wants to buy?
Oh, yeah. Going to there.